You are Locked On Bulls, your daily podcast on the Chicago Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to another episode of Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. You can subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Audioboom, TuneIn, Google Play, anywhere you can find podcasts. Please leave us a five-star review on iTunes. You can email us with any advertising inquiries or basketball questions at LockedOnBulls@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at LockedOnBulls. Like us on Facebook at LockedOnBulls. I'm Sean Hyken of The Athletic. With me, as always, Cody Westerlund of 670 The Score. Cody, we're recording this on a Saturday. It's going to run on a Sunday. The sheriff is in town.
And he is policing the Bulls like they haven't been policed in at least a year and a half.
We're not talking about Fred Hoiberg, who has been coaching them harder with all the practices going around 2 hours.
It's a unified team effort, and the locker room portion of it's being led by Dwayne Wade,
yeah,
who the Bulls have credited for setting a good tone. Teammates have credited him. Fred Hoiberg's credited him. And today, Dwayne Wade basically said, before training camp started, we don't know the exact specifics of this meeting, but Fred Hoiberg came to him and said, you have unlimited freedom to get on the team as much as you want.
The term he used was carte blanche.
Dwayne Wade has been doing just that, going as far to say he stops practices sometimes to point things out.
And other people have, you know, have said the same thing. Taj said yesterday that Wade has been stopping practices to, in his words, curse guys out. Dwayne pushed back at that a little bit today. But
yeah, he jokingly pushed back, and Dwayne called it tough love, which I like. I mean, it's easy storylines here for us on it. But the point isn't the exact specifics of it. The point is that this is the approach Dwayne Wade has. And we won't know how well it's working till I think the regular season's a few weeks in.
Right.
But at least it's happening, or they're saying it's happening, because this did need to be step one for this Bulls team.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think that the fact that Wade is there, I don't think this necessarily means that, you know, Fred is not coaching the team, because I think what this means in terms of, you know, Wade being very vocal and Wade kind of getting on guys is that Fred can basically say, look, I'm going to use my time as your coach to implement the basketball sets,
yes,
implement the plays that we want to run, implement my system, and then I don't have to deal as much with, and this isn't directly what he said, this is just what I'm getting from it, and I don't have to deal as much with, like, the personal, like, getting on guy stuff, because you have somebody like Dwayne Wade who has won multiple championships in the NBA, has been an all-star however many times he's been an all-star, has been in the league for as long as he has, and guys are going to listen to him on that stuff more than they're going to listen to on Fred, and so I think it's kind of a smart delegation of duties.
Responsibilities, yeah, and that's the thing. Fred's mentioned this before. At the end of last season, I think, kind of early on this season, he admitted his message in 2015-16, his rookie year when the Bulls missed the playoffs, he admitted his message didn't get across. And he put that responsibility and onus on himself. But at the same time, what he didn't say, that you pick up when you're around them enough, listen to people talk kind of, you know, more casually off the record stuff. I mean, he was surprised again how much drama came with that Bulls team, that he thought he was signing up for the basketball portion, and he knew, I mean, he was in college, there's different levels in college. I mean, you're dealing with more immature people. When you get in the professional game, you're dealing with more money issues, stuff like that, well, egos, finances.
Especially because he was at Iowa State, which is, it's a reasonably big college program, but it's not nearly the level of media scrutiny that, like, Duke or Kentucky or something like
real
that
small
would
small town
have.
Feel.
Whereas Chicago, I mean, with the Bulls, not only is it an NBA job, but it's Chicago, and it's the Chicago Bulls, which is one of the teams that, you know, has the most fan base around the world.
Yeah.
A lot of attention on it, a very tough local media. Every move that he makes, every single thing he says is going to get scrutinized a lot more, and I think he was a little bit taken aback by that.
Yeah, dissected. So, like, I mean, there's no doubt what Fred wants to do is implement basketball ideas and have a self-policed locker room that sets a tone that he doesn't have to come in and say, hey, play harder or get along, you know. He doesn't want to worry about players' feelings. That's the last thing he wants to worry about. Now, that comes with coaching. That comes with territory. That's probably something he needs to get a little better at, you know, as it goes on in the NBA. But there's no doubt that he wants Dwayne Wade to take this role. And again, that comes back to the Bulls kind of re-implementing respect around the league as a locker room that is cohesive, chemistry. And Dwayne Wade, by all accounts, is helping so far. And I do think that's good. And he said in his own words were, it's about policing each other and also passing it down to the other guys in the locker room. And he was referring to himself, Rajon Rondo, Jimmy Butler, who are being looked at as the self-coined three alphas by Rondo. And they're the three guys, and they don't just say that because they're the three best players, going to score the most points or whatnot, but they're saying that because they're the three guys everyone in that young locker room is turning to. So I do get a kick out of some of the stuff. Like, I mean, just the thought from afar of Dwayne Wade stopping practice to point at people, chastise people, say, don't do this, do this, you got to go harder here, you know, set the screen harder, do this, be a team player. That kind of cracks me up.
Well, the thing is, you have to keep in mind that this is all, and he said something like that today about how he's been in one place for 13 years, so this is all sort of new to him. But I have to imagine it's a little bit of a culture shock because Pat Riley runs such a tight ship in Miami, and Eric Spoelstra has been there for so long. Yeah, Wade is, like, on court. He's the leader of the team. But he, like, all that stuff is so, you know, built into the culture already. He gets to Chicago. It's a team with a relatively new coach, a lot of really young players who haven't been through it before. And he has to basically go there and be like, look, guys, I'm Dwayne Wade. I'm, you know, I've been in Miami for so many years. We had, this is how we did things here. That's a championship level organization. This is what we have to do. So he has to kind of have more responsibility of getting that through to other players than maybe he did in Miami because Riley and Spoelstra did so much of that stuff behind the scenes.
Yeah, and I thought this was important to point out, a comment from Fred Hoiberg and Dwayne Wade today. Fred called Friday's practice the most competitive practice he's had in his Bulls tenure, which is a year and now a couple weeks into training camp or whatnot. Most spirited, most competitive, pretty much hardest practice they'd had. A lot of scrimmaging. Dwayne Wade said the Bulls in the first 5 days of the season now, and I think that spans seven practices or so, eight by the time Saturday night they have a non-contact drill or whatnot in practice. He called it the most scrimmaging he's done in his career, so a lot more than he did in Miami. And you got to remember, his Miami tenure was marked by playing with Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh under Eric Spoelstra, and also playing with
LeBron,
Shaq.
You mean?
Dwayne Wade playing with LeBron. And then also Dwayne Wade playing with Shaq under Pat Riley and Stan Van Gundy. So he's had those hard coaches before, and he confirmed that the Bulls are scrimmaging a lot, which usually in the NBA, if you're going to scrimmage a lot in practice, means you're trying to spark an edge.
But you're trying to spark an edge, and you're also, again, you know, Fred Hoiberg has this offensive system that he has to try to implement better than he was able to last year. There are eight players on the team who weren't on the team last year. 10 of the players on the team are third year or less, to use one of Gar Forman's talking points about getting younger and more athletic. But it's still a reality. These are younger, less experienced guys on the team that have to learn more in terms of, you know, get as much practice as possible in terms of having game-like experiences doing
continuity.
Scrimmages, right? You want to have as much of that stuff implemented as possible before they have their first, I guess, preseason game this coming Monday against the Bucks.
Yeah, it's worth noting Dwayne Wade so far has participated in every practice pretty much entirely fully. I mean, he's gone to the sidelines to get a drink of water whenever it's his turn to sit out for a blow a few times. But he's done everything. It's still up into the air as far as the workload the Bulls are going to have him just implement and undergo and conduct. As far as resting, they've preached communication time and again, so I wouldn't be surprised if next week he has a Veterans Day off or something, but he's making it a point to physically be there and go through everything, not just say these things, when, I mean, it's a possibility that he could have sat out a practice by now or one of the two sessions in a day, but he hasn't so far.
Right, and I think part of that is, you know, we've been talking about him being a leader. Like, he wants to set an example for the young guys. He doesn't want to come in there and their first experience of, oh, we get to play with a Hall of Famer like Dwayne Wade, we're going to learn how to do things the right way, and then their first experience is, oh, he's taking a couple of practices off. Like, I think he's very conscious of that. And, you know, as the season goes on, it's going to be a little bit easier to justify, look, I'm old, we've played this many minutes, like, my body needs this. But early on, you know, the guys like Bobby Portis and Chris Felicio and Denzel Valentine, who are relatively inexperienced NBA players, in Valentine's case, a rookie, doesn't need to be, you know, seeing the guy that came in as the leader taking practices off right away. And I'll be really interested to see what kind of workload Dwayne Wade has in the preseason games that are coming up next week. They got a game against the Bucks and then two against the Pacers. I would imagine that since it's preseason, he's probably going to be closer to 20 than 30 because they don't want to overexert him in a meaningless preseason game, and Fred probably wants to get a look at some of the other guys, but it'll be interesting to see kind of how they handle that.
Yeah, and I know it sounds like we're dissecting, like, the smallest of the smallest things. Like,
This is what we got right now.
Not just that. Literally, did Dwayne Wade go through this drill? And you're like, does it matter? Why does it matter? Like, they're kind of just blowing hot air or whatever and not carrying any meaning with it. You have to remember that the Bulls teams of these last couple years, with Derrick Rose on them and Joakim Noah to an extent with those knee problems where they'd scale them back in camp, there were some hard feelings and not everyone on the same page about the workload they were going through in practice because they'd maybe sit out defensive drills.
Same thing with Powell getting a lot of days off because he was an older guy.
So the fact that I know we're breaking this down a lot, and I know, like, I understand it's not a big deal if Dwayne Wade sits a day out, but I'm saying in the past, these things have caused small rifts in a way or contributed to the disarray that the Bulls and dysfunction they were undergoing. So in some ways it does matter. We're not blowing it up to be too much, but at the same time, that's kind of the perspective or context to it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's the kind of thing, first of all, this is all we really have to talk about since there aren't any games yet, but also, I mean, yeah, this stuff is important. You know, having as drama-free of a training camp as possible early on, because there's going to be drama, there are going to be issues during the season, that's just inevitable, whether it's to the extent that it was last year, you know, to be seen, but it's inevitable. You know, even the Warriors had drama.
Sure.
Like, there's no such thing as a drama-free season, but having unnecessary stuff during training camp is something you want to avoid as much as possible, and from all indications, so far the Bulls are doing a good job of avoiding that kind of stuff.
So, Bucks-Bulls, Monday night, preseason opener, Sean. What are you most looking forward to? What's the storyline? You know, if you're following that three storylines to watch piece going in. I mean, what are the things that are sticking out to you? Just a couple of them.
Well, it's really just kind of the different combinations of players that Fred is going to play together. Obviously, the thing that he hasn't told us, he's made a point of not telling us, is who's going to be the starting power forward, whether it's Taj or Nico. I would imagine it's probably going to be Nico getting the first crack at it, just, again, as we've talked about a million times, because they don't have any other shooting in the starting lineup, so I would imagine he's going to get the first shot at it. And then just some of the other positional stuff. You know, is he going to play Denzel a little bit at the one? Is he going to play Taj a little bit at the five? Is he going to play Doug a little bit at the four? Those are just kind of things that he's talked about doing over the last couple of weeks, that, you know, he's going to look at doing some of that stuff. We'll see how much of that goes. We'll see how much, like, Denzel and Bobby Portis and Chris Felicio, some of the young guys, play, how they look. That's kind of what preseason is for, is just experimenting with stuff in a game that doesn't count, so it doesn't matter. If you lose this game, then it's like, okay, now we know that lineup doesn't work, and it's a game that doesn't count in the standings.
Yeah, I think what I'm most focused on is I was perusing some Bulls stats the other morning, and the Bulls, looking at transition, like, Fred Hoiberg came in rookie coaching season, they're like, space and pace and push and transition, get easy buckets. The most cliched, overused slogan in the NBA history. You know what I mean? Like, get easy buckets and transition, fast break. And then the Bulls didn't do that. They were literally last in the NBA in points per possession in transition opportunities, which I believe Fred Hoiberg attributed to bad decisions in transition. And I asked him personally, I was like, you know, why do you think this is going to be different? Because they were around 10, 11, 12, I think, in pace last year as far as pushing the ball. So they did have their transition opportunities, but they were really inefficient when they did have them. And he said Rondo's been terrific in his career, is what Fred said, about making the decisions and getting out and setting others up in transition, which is, I think, the biggest reason to be optimistic about that. But I want to see how this is implemented. I mean, Dwayne Wade's not a spring chicken here, you know? No. Like, these guys aren't built to play 1,000 miles an hour, but at the same time, when they get those opportunities, how often can they get them? How do they utilize those transition opportunities and finish? And just kind of the feel and the flow of that, because I do think that's important. I don't think the Bulls are playing at a top 8 pace in the NBA this season or anything like that, but they do have to be better in transition. I mean, they were the worst last year. And I think some of that probably ties back to decisions Derrick Rose made in transition. And just the fact that, I mean, the backup point guard situation was kind of, you know,
not
you
great.
Never knew what you were going to get night to night out of, like, Aaron Brooks. So there were a lot of factors in that.
Well, do you remember there was, like, a week last season
of course
where,
I remember.
Where Derek and Fred both said that you know, the
transition,
the goal, that they were trying to push the pace. And so Fred's challenge to Derek was to make sure he gets the ball over the half court line by the time the shot clock hits 21. And I think you and I forget which game this was, but it was at some point in like December or January. You and I spent a whole game just tracking how many times Derek brings the ball up the floor. and it gets over by 21, and it did not happen very often.
Let's just say we didn't need two hands to track
no,
it. I don't think.
No.
And that was a time period in which, like, we were asking Fred every day. I mean, these are the storylines when you have a new coach, and asking him how his system's being implemented, you know. And the Bulls, again, they had pretty good success early in the season. A lot of it was attributed to their defense being strong until the Joakim Noah injury. But at the same time, it's like Fred got hired for that offensive mind, so you want to know how well he thinks this is going. And we'd ask him, and he'd be like, I want Derek to push more. I think he can do better, you know, like we were having talks and everything. Then we'd go to Derek and ask him, and Derek would be like, pushing the ball harder than I ever have in my career. It's the best. I love it. We're doing great. And I know that's, again, that's Derek, just Derek hashtag saying things. But at the same time, like, they were not on the same page. Can Fred and Rondo get on that same page? And I think that's what I'll look for in the preseason opener, in addition to kind of what you said. But I don't know. Anything else stand out to you in that game? Do you think they can be good at transition finally?
I think now, like, the mindset is there. And Rondo, as we know, is a kind of guy who likes to get out and set guys up for stuff. He's a very different type of point guard than Derrick Rose, so I think we're going to see, at least at first, we're going to see a little bit more of an effort to do that. And, you know, whether you said Dwayne Wade wasn't really a spring chicken, neither is Rondo. He's 30, and he had a pretty major knee injury a few years ago, so he's not nearly the athletic point guard that he was earlier on in his career when he was in Boston when they were title contenders. But, you know, yeah, if he can get out there, get guys set up for shots, you know, get guys open looks, then, yeah, I mean, that would be successful. Whether they win or lose these preseason games is not really important.
And that's an interesting thing, too, when I was looking at those stats. And, again, not to get too geeky or sabermetric here, but the Bulls were, like, third or fourth in the NBA in efficiency in spot-up shooting. So when they did get guys lined up to shoot, I'm not saying frequency, but I'm saying efficiency when they did get those opportunities, they converted. A lot of that's tied to Doug McDermott being sixth, I think, in the NBA in three-point shooting last year. He did a lot of spot-ups. Yeah. And Mike Dunleavy, I can't remember all his stats, but generally when he's open and spotted up, he was an efficient three-point shooter. That's something you'd want. Nico, toward the end of the year, a lot better.
Really
three-point
came on.
Shooting, corners, where he find his role there a little bit more. So if the Bulls can press toward that a little more, that's how you get better offensively, I think. So those will all be storylines to watch in the preseason opener. We do expect Fred Hoiberg probably to be suited up for the preseason opener on the sidelines. But after practice, he wasn't in a suit, obviously, on Saturday. Sean, what was he?
No, he was making sure people remember that the Bulls are summer league champions. He was wearing his Victory in Vegas shirt.
That's a terrific shirt. I believe you have a picture of it. Got tweeted out somewhere
on Twitter. Go look on Twitter. It's on my Twitter, @Hyken.
On the social media sphere. That's good. That's worth a chuckle. It brings me back to when the schedule got released by the Bulls. And I think we've said this on the podcast before. The NBA schedule got released.
And it
glitched. So the Bulls.com is, like, in conjunction with NBA.com, overseen by different, way smarter
Turner.
Computer programmers, you know what I mean?
Right.
So they don't have all the responsibility and permissions on their page, but it accidentally, the schedule came out, and it said a W next to the Timberwolves game or whatever, or season series, 1-0 next to the Timberwolves because they beat them in the Summer League Championship,
and
it was a computer glitch. But, you know, the Bulls haven't been shy about flaunting that Summer League
On the
title.
One hand, it's just Summer League. On the other hand, as Denzel Valentine put it after the Summer League Championship game, anyone who says it's just Summer League has never won the Summer League Championship. So we still don't have any word on whether there are rings involved, whether Doug gets a ring because he was only on the practice team at Summer League, whether they're going to hang a banner at the Advocate Center, whether they're going to hang a banner at the Sears Center out in Hoffman Estates, where the parade is going to be. We're still waiting on that stuff, but Fred, rocking the shirt.
And along the Summer League note, I guess, kind of ties to the Sears Center and the D-League team. The Bulls did hire Bobby Lutz as an assistant.
Hard D-League news.
For the Windy City Bulls.
Bobby Lutz and A.J. Guyton.
Yep.
Bulls legend.
Former Bull. A.J. Guyton, I believe he was on some poor Bulls teams.
He was part of that 2000 draft class where, as our friend Casey Johnson of the Tribune, who was covering the team at the time, pointed out, the Bulls drafted 6 rookies that year, and they all made the team. And it was like A.J. Guyton,
amazing.
Marcus Fizer, Dalibor.
Khalid Alameen,
Jamal Crawford. I forget who the fifth one was.
We might be missing someone good or something. I don't know.
I don't think. This is the 2000 draft. I don't think we're really missing somebody good. Jamal Crawford legitimately might have had the best career out of anybody in that draft.
That's very true. We did want to pass on a Windy City Bulls note. Nate Lenzer obviously got that head coaching gig, was a video coordinator
yes.
For the Bulls last year. But he mentioned that you get 8 to 10 D-League contracts, I think, and then, like, the other 4 spots on your roster, I think you can dress up to about 14. The other 4 spots are kind of in flux, so those are the spots where someone from the Bulls, a youngster like Denzel Valentine or Chris Felicio, could go play a game. Other teams, I think 22 NBA teams have D-League affiliates, but those other 8 teams might send a player your way. So I think you get 8 to 10 D-League contracts or whatever, regulars kind of there, to chip in. So we'll see as the season goes how the Bulls utilize that, but I think foremost on our mind, that season preseason opener, Monday night, we get to see Giannis, point guard Giannis, I think, too.
Point Giannis.
At the United Center.
Sucks about Chris Middleton. I was really looking forward to what the Bucks were going to do.
Torn hamstring, I believe.
Torn hamstring, so that's not good. But, you know, we're going to get to see Giannis. We're going to get to see Thon Maker. We're going to get to see hometown kid Jabari Parker.
Very true. And there's probably, I mean, for Bucks storylines, Jabari's progress and how he fits in, and whether he can be better at defense and shoot that three-pointer, huge storyline for the Bucks this year. As to whether they're going to be a playoff team, you know what I mean?
Well, I think they're. I don't think it's really after Middleton got hurt. He's so important to what they do. I don't think it's really fair to expect them to be a playoff team. But you'd like to see some steps forward made by Jabari and Giannis, especially with Giannis just getting that big contract.
Because I do like what they have set up there if they can fill out the rest of their roster.
Shout out to my boy Seth Partnow getting hired as director of basketball research. He and I slept on a friend's floor together at the Sloan Conference 2 years ago. Now he's working for the Bucks.
Totally geeked out. That's good. So that should mean we all get smarter about what Central Division basketball.
Yeah.
I don't think NBA divisions matter, and I just said that in a tone like I hope I remember the division the Bulls are in there. But yeah, that's cool. You'll have to.
We'll get him on the podcast if he's allowed to.
But yeah, like I don't know, get some cool Bulls stats like from people even smarter than us and smarter than Synergy.
Probably that's not very hard.
But people that built Synergy. But we'll keep you up to date on those storylines as always. Email us at lockedonbulls@gmail.com with basketball questions, advertising inquiries, always welcome. Follow me on Twitter at Cody Westerlund. Follow Sean at Hyken. Follow us at lockedonbulls, and most of all, subscribe to us.
That's right. You can get us on iTunes. Make sure you leave us a 5-star review. That's crucial. You can also get us on Stitcher Radio, Audio Boom, TuneIn, Google Play. Subscribe to The Athletic to read my work. Go to 670thescore.com to read Cody's work, and we will be back with you soon.